Welcome to Alchemist X Innovators Inside, the podcast where we explore the world of corporate innovation and dive deep into the minds of thought leaders, high achievers, and risk takers. I'm your host, Ian Bergman, and together we'll uncover the challenges, triumphs, and secrets behind successful innovation journeys. Whether you're an aspiring entrepreneur, an industry veteran, or simply curious about the ever-evolving landscape of innovative ideas and what it takes to put them into practice, this is the podcast for you. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and let's embark on this exciting journey together.
Natalie, welcome to the pod.
Thank you so much for having me, Ian. I'm so excited to be here and looking forward to our chat today.
I am too. I know it's a Friday afternoon. It's like that Friday after Thanksgiving, right? Where we're all sitting here thinking, aren't we supposed to still be on holiday?
That's right. And no one's pants fit.
I know. Well, I wasn't going to say that, but that is the case. Luckily, we're just seeing the top half. We're not seeing the loose waist sweatpants. But but yeah, so I'm really glad that you're joining us. And for the listeners, well, I'm just really happy to welcome Natalie Bourne. Natalie Bourne's a principal consultant at Arch & Tower, an FD company, and 2 decades of experience as a consultant, author, keynote speaker, podcaster. So I'm going to learn some tips there. And a professional dedicated to driving innovation and leadership solutions. This is a topic that is near and dear to my heart, so I'm super thrilled to have you here. Natalie, can I ask you to just expand on that intro a little bit? Just tell us a little bit about yourself and your innovation journey.
Yeah. So, you know, as you mentioned there, my bio, I got started kind of in corporate America and eventually picked up a huge bug for innovation, as did you, which is why I think we're here together. But, you know, one of the things for me, I started very early in my career in product development. And really what we were doing is we were either growing organically in certain countries, or we were actually acquiring companies. And then we had 6 months to basically get them off of their platform and onto ours. And so through that, I just realized there was so much around just how you engage people through a process of moving them over, right? They're the stakeholder, but they have challenges, concerns, they have customers at the other end of that are screaming for certain features. And so at the very young age of 20 something, it was quite a trial by fire to figure out, how do you keep these new founders happy that where we've just purchased their organization, and also keep their end customers happy, and also keep our company happy as you kind of take them on this journey? And so love the career. I ended up working with several corporate organizations in the space of product development and innovation. And yeah, just caught the bug for it. Now I consult, I help many organizations wrap their arms around innovation, wrap their arms around how to help grow and move their organization forward as a function of growth internally and externally.
That's amazing. And you've taken the leap into being a published author. I think we'll talk about that a little later. I'm excited to learn a lot more about that. But I want to go back to this sort of like some of this early career experience, because you know, getting thrown into the deep end on M&A, that's a thing. And I think, you know, one of the things they teach us in business school is that acquisitions don't always go very well. You know, and you get these companies saying, I am going to buy innovation, I'm going to buy a needed change, and then things break.
Yeah.
What did that teach you?
You know, that was such a phenomenal time. I mean, there were so many lessons learned. One of the things that I loved about the organization I worked for, this was CareerBuilder.com, early 2002, 2003, kind of that time frame. And so, you know, very much in the .com before we had the big burst. But one of the things, you know, I learned was how important empowerment is for your employees. Oftentimes I would fly overseas, right? I'd be in the Netherlands, I'd be in Sweden, I'd be in Greece, and I couldn't call anyone in the US because they were sleeping. And what I realized later is how empowered our team was to sit with the founder and make key decisions. And so there's something to that. I think that a lot of times the, you know, smaller organizations, smaller startups, sometimes they struggle to actually figure out what does it look like to empower your people so that they can be in another time zone and make decisions with the right lens, with the right, you know, kind of ethos that you may have. And I'll be honest. I mean, there were times where I made the wrong call and they let me know I made the wrong call. But yeah, for the most part, I would say 80, 90% of the time, I could make the right call because I understood the DNA of the organization and I understood what they were after. And I was in enough of the right rooms to hear and to absorb and then to go and execute. And so to me, that's a critical part. That was a huge learning for me, as well as just how to negotiate with founders, because at the end of the day, this is their baby. They have poured blood, sweat, tears, money, time, energy into this platform. And now we're like, hey, congratulations. Thanks for coming along the journey. You have 6 months to get onto our platform. So let's do this. And it's terrifying, right? To take take your child, right? Give it to someone else and say, I hope it still looks how it's supposed to look by the time that 6 months is up.
Well, that is so interesting because it is terrifying. And I'm noticing you're using a lot of emotion language, right? Mm-hmm. You're using terrifying, you're using empowerment. And I think that really speaks to some of the human challenge here. And I'd love to actually talk about that a little bit. But let's take the perspective of these founders, right? Like when you're a startup founder, you are, for better or worse, you're in control of your own destiny. And you're building against your vision, right? And hopefully you get to a place that these founders got to where they have created something that has market value. And that's great, right? But the interesting thing about the process of partnering with a larger organization or getting bought by a larger organization is that gives you an opportunity for scale of impact.
Yeah.
But, and here's the fun, right? But you're no longer in control.
Yeah.
So how did you see these founders and how did you help them sort of navigate that dynamic? And what has that taught you about innovation in larger organizations?
Yeah, I think, you know, first and foremost, I think just approaching everybody, like you said, from that human aspect and really sitting down with them, taking the time to get to know them. By the time that 6 month transition was over, we were best friends. I mean, we had spent so much time together creating meaning and really understanding what the needs were of their platform, of their people. And I think that, you know, a lot of people go in, right, and they kind of do the rip and flip and then they're out. And that really wasn't our approach. We wanted to absorb them into the bigger ecosystem. We wanted their insight. We wanted their knowledge. We wanted them to be a part of the journey with us and to be excited to go on that journey. And that's a different approach. So the speed for sure was there, but we had to slow down enough to create meaning for me to actually ask, can I meet some of your customers? Can I understand what's driving them to use your platform? Can I learn about you? Can I learn about your backstory? The other thing that was so critical and I think so important when we think about these things is I looked at what our competitor was doing at the time. They were also buying up companies, but they were leaving them on their platform. And it's one of those things when you do a merger and acquisition, I've seen this over and over again, you're either going to get the pain up front through that 6 month or 1 year, however long it takes, transition over, or you're going to take that pain over and over and over again. And so I'll fast forward to this other organization I worked at where they had acquired tons of different softwares. And, you know, we were sitting there with this brand new innovation we wanted to bring to market. And it was kind of a joke because we were like, well, platform A can take it, but platform B can't. Platform C might, but platform E, we may have to test. And it was always this thing of not being able to release value to the customer quickly because they didn't take the pain up front. So they were living with it year over year. So the beautiful thing, kind of fast forwarding, we're going back to that time, was that we actually took the pain up front to get people into the ecosystem, to integrate them in. And that was a beautiful thing because it really, although it was hard up front, it really created the right platform that we wanted for the long haul.
Well, I love that. And I think there's a lesson in there that I think is a bunch of lessons, but there's one that I'm trying to extract. And it goes something along the lines of, you know, like innovation is change, right? Of course, mm-hmm. Change is often painful. But if you're actually trying to deliver something to your customers, you need to, you know, you need to hide that pain, mitigate it. You need to make it as frictionless as possible. And so as an organization trying to create and drive innovation, take the pain up front, figure it out, make it seamless, and then make it really easy for others to change behavior.
Yeah, that's powerful. I think even what you said about, you know, the pain's going to be felt either way. It's really deciding who gets to feel that pain, right? When you wait and you don't do that integration, it is the customer ultimately that doesn't receive the value from all those great things that you're releasing, because you have to do gymnastics and backbends to get it into all these different platforms. And so you really actually are passing that pain on to the customer versus you yourself absorbing that pain and saying, how do we get to a seamless way of integration of communication with all these systems so that we can actually create the right experience for the long haul.
Yeah. And I really do like this lesson, because I think there's a parallel to purely internal innovation as well. So I just got back from a trip overseas, and I, you know, dropped in full jet lag, 10-hour time zone difference, into a room of people who want to be innovators within large enterprises. Wow. There are people who are passionate about this, right? Who want to drive change. And boy, are we going to get into the emotional and the frustration and like how hard that is, right? But like, it's interesting because there's a conversation that we had in that room that sounded a little bit like this, that sounded a little bit like, if you are the champion and the sponsor of this new technology, this new business model, this new thing that you believe in, pain is going to be felt. And how can you help your stakeholders move on it? We spend so much time on stakeholder mapping and stakeholder understanding and getting really empathetic about what they are going through because you're trying to get them to change behavior. And then we realize, well, what does that mean? Taking the burden off them means we as innovators actually have to carry a fair bit of that burden. And that's hard.
Yeah. That weight is a really important part of this discussion. I think it's something we probably don't talk about enough in innovation, is about the weight you carry, the weight of the success of what you're trying to push, the weight of testing, the weight of getting in front of the right customers, the weight of hearing the feedback. I mean, there's been many times that we've been looking to push out new features, new products, and the customer's like, I hate this. It's hot garbage. And you have to pause there and say,
yep,
tell me more. That hurts, but tell me more. And so there is a lot of weight with invention. There's a lot of pain, but there's also so much beauty in it and so much learning in it. And so I do think that oftentimes, right, it feels very exciting to invent, but we don't talk about kind of the dark side of what if it doesn't work out? What if it's harder than I thought? What if the path is not super clear? Then what?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that can be very personally impactful, right? Because we're, as long as we're on the dark side and the dark side of risk, right? You talk about the beauty of learning, which I love that actually as a phrase. And the flip side that people are fearful of is when this doesn't work, that comes back to me. How do those around me?
Yeah.
You know, am I getting fired? Right. Am I losing my house, or am I not getting that bonus? You know, whatever it is, it's challenging. So, you know, when you're working with organizations, how do you help them find the beauty in learning? Mm-hmm. I love that phrase.
Yeah. I think that we're digging into right now some cultural stuff that I think is so important to talk about when we talk about innovation, right? Because how you approach innovation says everything about your culture. And it actually explains whether or not you actually want innovation within your organization. And so you're right. So many times people, you know, there's this fear of failure. And there's this idea that, you know, I could get fired, I could lose my job, I could even be publicly humiliated or shamed, right? And that might be worse than the prospect of losing your job.
Yep.
And so there's all these things that go into, should I step out, take a risk? Should I take a leap? And I think what we have to do as leaders, as organizations, is we have to help people figure out how to fail cheap and fast within guardrails. And so oftentimes, you know, recently I took the journey, as you mentioned in the intro, of writing a book, and I share all of these like big, bold failures in innovation. And a lot of the reason why there were failures is because, you know, there weren't these natural guardrails in place where we were talking to each other, right? Breaking down silos and talking to other people in other departments that would have knowledge and ingenuity that we just don't possess, and talking to the customer and sitting across from them and really pressing in, do you really want this? Well, is it urgent? And would you pay for it now? And then we don't do the due diligence to really see, okay, how would I price this out? What's the real demand for it? And so because those pieces don't happen and someone has this bright idea and this beautiful invention, off to the races we go. And the reason why I think innovation is such a bad word in so many organizations is because we invest a ton of money and time, and sometimes they don't see the outcome. So what if we could kind of pare that down and create some guardrails so that people could feel like they could really, you know, ideate, innovate, reach some return on investment, you know, guardrails. But then if it's true and it needs to really begin to launch, then let's launch it. But if everything in our scorecard is telling us we need to pause, stop, or go back and look and learn, then that failure should trigger learning. It shouldn't trigger shame.
Okay. So I hear you. And I, by the way, I agree in principle. This is such a hard thing for most organizations, right? If you're a public organization, you're driven by quarterly numbers, and most people know what they need to do to hit that quarterly number. Might kill them in the long run, but they know how to get there, right? Like, you know, if you are a capital and resource allocator and a manager across an organization, and you're looking at sort of like the ROI of your individual teams, you're probably not looking on a time horizon of more than like a year. Mm-hmm. Have you seen examples of, I'd say, organizations that have been successful at saying, we caught the lesson early, and we stopped and pivoted or changed or whatever it is because of it? Like, where have you seen that happen? And what advice do you give maybe to leaders who are trying to create that culture and that business process?
Yeah, I mean, so I've seen both. Let's just be real. I've seen the slow moving train wreck that leads to millions of dollars lost, and just the big challenges that come with that, and the big accountability that comes with that. And right, you know, people.
I've led one of those. It's rough.
Yeah. It's very rough, and it's heartbreaking in some regard, because you look back on it and say, man, not only should this be a Harvard Business Review case study, but man, why couldn't we have learned before it got to this moment, right? And so I've seen those for sure. I've been brought in at the end of those for sure. But to me, I want to go back to kind of my upbringing in business, especially when I was at Career Builder in the early days. We had four or five different ways to cultivate ideas. We had about four or five ways to incubate ideas, to get them into the organization, to get them through the organization, to get them tested with the customer. And so really, you know, there's a difference between sinking thousands of dollars and hundreds of thousands and $1 million into something, right? And so we were more in the thousands, not in the hundreds of thousands or millions, because, you know, we really did, and you mentioned it earlier, we leveraged the empathy map of the customer. We leveraged the voice of the customer. We sat with the customer. We went through customer listening sessions whenever we were going to even dream about launching something. And it's the difference between me coming with a napkin sketch versus a prototype, right? Most times we're like, let's build this thing all the way out to a prototype, and then we're going to put it in front of the customer. I think that is even like too late in the game. We should be going back a little bit sooner to say, I have this idea. I want to pitch it to you. What do you think? Yeah. I don't think it'll work. Okay, tell me more. Why don't you think it'll work for what you're trying to do? Well, you're not really solving my problem. Great. Tell me why I'm not solving your problem. And what is the real problem that you're trying to solve? So I feel like a lot of us kind of, and I see this happen in smaller organizations too, where the founder has this beautiful idea and he just deploys all the resources and all the people. And I was brought in at the tail end of one of these to help them launch the product. And I said, I'm gonna stop us right here. We actually don't have a launchable product, because I've talked to 20 of your customers and I haven't found one that is willing to buy this. So we spent the next 6 months turning this product into something that people would actually purchase. And it was heartbreaking for the founder, but oftentimes we have these founder ideas and everyone wants to serve. So they're off to the races serving this founder, and we're on a race to the bottom, right? It's something that nobody wanted, nobody asked for.
Yeah, there is such a powerful statement in there. I mean, I think when done properly, right, the process of innovation that powers startup ecosystems is highly iterative learning, rapid iterative learning that is customer centric. Now, that's easy to say in theory, or like, but you know, in practice, it gets harder. But I think the fact that that scales from startup and new concept right up into any change in a large organization rings really true. And the other thing that I heard you say is, iterative is good. The $1,000 bet that you learn from is good, because the accumulation of those lessons, those steps, those changes are going to be a potentially large and significant change, innovation in your business, right? But like, you learned along the way. And so you navigate along the way. That's a mistake that when I'm talking to larger corporations, and I'm curious if you see this, but like when I'm talking to large corporations, particularly what I'll call like senior middle managers,
yeah,
right? Like people with a lot of authority, but they're just below the C-suite usually. Mm-hmm. And so they have to get some approvals here. You know, it seems like such a hard thing to get across that innovation doesn't have to be invention of the next new $5 billion business. In fact, it shouldn't be, because that presumes that you know what that's going to be. Right. Follow your bloody customers, right?
Right. Yeah. Innovation is so incremental. And I think that, you know, like you said, when I hear that example, it is taking 5 or 6 leaps out there into the future versus building incrementally to where you have that over time. And I think, you know, part of what you want to look at it in your business is, you know, what is the percentage each year that you're getting in incremental innovation? You know, is it 10 to 15%? Is it way less than that? Have you not had incremental innovation in years? And if you haven't, that's a concern, because I think what we're seeing too is that business is moving so rapidly, AI is moving so rapidly, that if you're not finding incremental ways to grow your revenue, then essentially you're not grabbing bigger pieces of the pie that are coming onto the scene daily. And so to me, it needs to be a core thrust within organizations that they're thinking this way, that they're thinking, you know, I think about when 2008 hit and, you know, I was still working at that same role at CareerBuilder in product development. And our CEO came to us and said, we need to create 2 new innovative products every year. That wasn't innovation for innovation's sake. He knew that if we didn't continue to innovate in a decline, we were going to be non-existent.
Yep.
And so there's something to that when we're not putting innovation at the forefront of our thinking of how we look at our revenue, how we look at the bottom line, we're actually kind of, you know, we might be thriving in the short term, but we're stunting our growth in the long term because we're not thinking ahead.
I love it. So, you know, we had a previous guest on the pod here, Robin Bolton, who says innovation is not an idea problem. It's a leadership problem. Mm-hmm. And that sounds like an example of a leader embracing innovation. And it can be as simple as doing what this leader did, right? Which is saying, we're going to try stuff and we have to try mm-hmm. stuff or yeah. we're going to die. Yeah. But the other thing, so I'm giggling to myself here because I'm like, okay, so we have 2 thought leaders in innovation on this podcast. And I think we're basically saying that we're advocating incrementalism here.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. Yeah. Okay. But now I'm going to flip the script a little, because we've just sat here advocating incrementalism as your path mm-hmm. to innovation, which I fundamentally believe in. And now you've got Set It On Fire, and there's mm-hmm. a little, I don't know if it's a quote or tagline, but I've got in front of me here, don't just get out of the box, break the box and set it on fire. That doesn't sound like incrementalism.
Yeah, I think, you know, you're right. Right, right. What are we setting on fire? That's a good question. Yeah. You know, I think there's a couple of things that we're setting on fire. One, you know, I think we're setting on fire the idea that only the top echelon of the organization can innovate. I think that that's a real issue. And, you know, we may be in or see organizations that say, no, everyone can innovate. But it's not in the saying it. It's in the, well, how do frontline workers raise their $100,000, $500,000 ideas to you? Is there even a path for them to get your attention and let you know that they have an idea? Maybe they've sat with 100 customers and they've heard a pattern. How do they get that pattern to somebody that can actually, you know, invest in that idea and see it through?
Yep.
And so a lot of what we're setting on fire is the idea that only the top folks in the organization can innovate. Anyone should be able to get their idea through the organization and give it a pass or fail at the end of the day, right? And if it fails, we learn. But if it passes, that was an opportunity that, you know, that we're getting to garner that we otherwise would have missed out on. So I think that's one thing. I think we have to set on fire limiting belief systems that, again, when we think about innovation, we think about certain people in our mind, you know, we think about certain companies, and then a lot of people just stop right there and they don't see themselves as an everyday innovator. I think the way you become an everyday innovator is by knowing your customer, by talking to your customer, and by being able to recognize and monetize patterns. And that's the beauty of innovation. If you can begin to recognize and monetize patterns, you're an innovator. doesn't mean you had to come up with it, right? You may have sat with 60 customers and you heard of those 60, 35 mentioned the same problem. You were able to go investigate that problem and solve it and then monetize it. That's a beautiful thing. So, you know, I just think that a lot of the way that innovation's been done in the past, a lot of the way it's been presented, it feels unapproachable for the average person. And I think we have to flip that mantra on its head and say, if we put the right frameworks, the right guardrails in place, anyone can innovate if they have the right processes and methodologies.
I gotcha. I definitely hear that. And I love the idea of enabling grassroots innovation. And I like this recognizing and monetizing patterns, although I feel like there's a missing piece there, right? You actually have to take action on it. Like, or you have to recognize the pattern and then you have to do something. You have to, you know, and so how do you reassure the middle manager? Like, we talk about the stuck middle, right? The poor middle manager. It's the line manager is the worst job in the world. We've all been there. And like, it's hard, right? Because you have all this accountability with minimal authority. How do you reassure them when you're saying anybody can be an innovator? All these people on your team can look for patterns, suggest, identify risk. And they're thinking, well, that just sounds like chaos. I'm not going to get my job done. Right?
Yeah, that's fair. And you know, I think it's one of those things where you don't have to be coming up with 60 ideas in a year, but I bet you have one idea. And I bet most people in the organization have that one idea that if we could actually take the time to see it through, you know, we could see a real innovation come to light. And so I believe there's many different ways to do that. So again, my upbringing, I realize now going to other organizations that it was a very unusual upbringing because we had hackathons. We had a competition called Ideas From Everywhere, where you could partner with anyone else in the organization and pitch your idea. And then that pitch basically went to a leader who helped you incubate that idea and then selected you to go to this bigger pitch with only like five or six other teams. And then they chose one, invested in it, and that person got to leave their day job and run it. So I recognize that, like, that's a weird upbringing to have in business because most people don't feel that.
Yep.
And so I think if you're leading at any level, your job is to figure out how to get this good idea to the right people. So I went to one of these business competitions one year, me and my partner, we had a great idea, loved it. It was such a good idea. At least that's what I tell myself. But we didn't win. So why did we not win? Because the person that won, not only did they come with their idea, they went out and got someone to prototype it and they sold like 10 before they even got there.
They got customer validation.
Yeah. How cool is it that we had customer quotes and people who said they would buy it, but they had actual purchase orders of people who were ready to buy it once it was built? Big difference. And so, you know, there's a beauty in going out and being able to come back and say, hey, not only is this a good idea, I have people that are ready to buy it right now.
That's awesome. So I love that story. And I think it can be inspirational for leaders, especially ones like, you know, we associate hackathons or pitch sessions, at least in my world, with technology companies, but it doesn't have to be, right? No. Anyone can say, this is a small thing that I can do and may pay big dividends.
Absolutely. So
what is one other great lesson, maybe that you put out there and set it on fire, or lesson or idea for folks as we come to the close of our time here?
Yeah. You know, so in one of my chapters, I think it's chapter 5, it's called It's Time to Grow Up. One of my favorite chapters. I talk about the idea. There's this quote out there by a guy named Craig Rochelle, and he says that weak systems make great people look bad and strong systems make good people look great. And I think that oftentimes when we talk about innovation, and it's a super fun area to be in, but a lot of time what we don't talk about is what has to be in a foundation in order for innovation to be successful. So if the organization lacks systems and it's in full-blown chaos, we all who love, you know, agile or grew up in agile love like the Lucille Ball clip where she's in the chocolate factory and it's all out chaos, right? And she's throwing chocolate in her blouse, in her hat, down her shirt. Like, it's just, it's wild, right? And you see most organizations function without real systems and process and no way for the frontline people to relay back to the management team that, hey, we are in full-blown chaos here. And so part of like one of the premises that I put forward is that, you know, documentation, systems, and processes are not an affront to innovation. They actually unlock and enable innovation. And so if we can create the right foundation, I believe that you can build anything on top of that foundation. But when our teams are, you know, working nights and weekends and burnt out, we don't cultivate the culture that we want, which is giving people space and time to dream ahead. And that simply goes back to the idea of working in the business versus on the business. We actually need to give all of our employees, not just our senior executives, time to work on the business, not in the business, because that's how you grow the organization for the future. So that's probably one of my favorite chapters. It's a fun topic to mentally spar with people on as well.
Yeah. And that's a topic that causes some serious self-reflection, right? I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, when was I on a walk without listening to a podcast where I right. could just think?
Yeah, without being productive all the time, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great note to end on, right? Innovation can and often does jump out of the quiet space, right? I'm still processing that. That is a wonderful thought. Well, Natalie, thank you for joining us on this conversation. I learned a lot. It's really fascinating. I am obviously going to have to go pick up a copy of Set It On Fire, and I'll check it out. And for everyone else, setitonfire.co is where you can go look at it. Natalie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for your time today, Ian. This was a blast.
Awesome. Thanks.
So that's a wrap for today's episode of Alchemist X Innovators Inside. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you found value and insight in today's discussion, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast and never miss an episode. Don't forget to share with your friends, colleagues, or anyone who is passionate about corporate innovation or just curious about great ideas and practical insights. Until next time, I'm Ian Bergman. Thanks for tuning in.